on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Joining me in the studio right now, Anthony Jenkins. He's a candidate for Ward 1 Councillor in Port Hope, and Rob Washburn as well. The reason I chose that particular song is because we're going to be talking probably quite extensively today about the historic hospital building. For some people, it's a future home for some people. Well, we hope anyway, if things go the way they should, or at least the way I think Anthony believes they should. Anyway, Anthony, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Very glad to have you in here. Now, you are running what you're calling a progressive campaign. You're urging voters to vote progressive, but also you're asking people to take a hard look at this particular project. We're talking about the former hospital site, the long-term, I guess it's a seniors facility that wants to get built there. And there has been controversy over the designation of the building. The new owner of the building wants to demolish the building. Why don't you take us through what your platform is?
To get a few things straight at first, what we have to understand that this property, 65 Ward Street, encompasses essentially a north and a south half. The south half is an existing long-term care facility that needs to be updated. It was built in the 1970s, I think, and is out of date and in need of being brought up to the modern standard. The north half of that property contains three historic buildings. Two in particular are of interest. One of them is the 1865 house that in 1911 was pressed into service as the first hospital in Port Hope. At about that same time, people in Port Hope raised money locally to build the grand imposing structure which dominates the north end of that property, and that's the 1915 hospital.
Right.
This 1915 hospital, that's when the cornerstone was laid, and that's the and the first operation as a hospital was in 1916, and there was additions made in the 20s, and it evolved from a hospital that was used to treat injured and gassed veterans of World War I, and after that it became the General Hospital. It also was a nursing training facility. It also became a long-term care facility. The hospital functions ceased in 1965. The long-term care facilities, they weren't called that at the time, nursing home, if you like. They ceased about 12 or 13 years ago. The situation we're faced in now is new owners, Southbridge Incorporated from Cambridge, bought the property in 2015. And they wish to update it, and not only update it, but also consolidate both of their Port Hope facilities on that one site. And in order to do that, they have to remove, at least according to their plan, the two historic hospital buildings. This, of course, has caused some dissension and a lot of concern, and there are many of us who feel this is totally unnecessary and also feel that the particular piece of property is inadequate and inappropriate for an expansion of the sort that they envisage. The upgrading the places, or the beds as they call them, the upgraded beds would require 65 or so percent more space, and they're adding another 65% to it. Doing the math, it's going to be four times the size of what's there now. And even with the hospital buildings gone, by their own admission, the lot is too small.
So why did you say it's unnecessary to be concerned and the concerns are unnecessary? Can you explain why that's significant?
No, there are concerns about the buildings being removed because these are precious, one-time-only heritage resources that are of great value to the community, socially, culturally, and economically. And the other concern is, of course, the damage that would be done to the neighborhood if the proposed development was built on that site.
But if you look at the building, I mean, it's not in great shape. There's been pictures that have been posted of parts of the building crumbling away. There's been lots of comments about the structural integrity of the building. Why is it so valuable from that standpoint? I mean, if it's not that great a building.
Well, it is that great of a building for a number of reasons. It was designed by prominent architects in the day in the classic neoclassic revival style that was popular at the time. And it was well designed and well constructed. and it has survived remarkably intact. The pictures that were posted showing crumbling masonry, they are of a few isolated locations on the building that were later additions or supports for a porch that were replacement supports. They are not indicative of the condition of the building. Looking at the building, we see that, and even in the video that was posted, we see that the building is level, it's square, it's plumb. There are no cracks in the masonry walls. In fact, it's really in remarkable shape both inside and out, other than it's been neglected or disused by the previous corporate owner and the present corporate owner. And as a result, it looks a little shabby.
So you mentioned as part of your argument that you see a cultural and a social value, but you also mentioned an economic. Well, how do you see it being an economic value?
Economic value is phenomenal. All you have to do is, look around the world, look around this country, or look around Port Hope, and you see all of the spin-off economic benefits that come from proper adaptive reuse of these heritage resources. They attract the right kind of people who do the right kind of things in town and make it a great place to live, which in turn attracts other forms of investment. And the creative class and the entrepreneurial class, they get in there, do their thing, then the manufacturing entrepreneurs and such follow because this makes it a nice place to live, a good place to live. But you don't even have to look that far down the road. You just have to do a cost-benefit analysis. Look at the cost of demolition and the cost of maintaining the building. The cost of demolition are, the loss of the building, another $200,000 or $300,000 to put it in the dump, all the dump space that it uses up. And whereas if the building was left and rehabilitated, it would be a $3 to $5 million renovation project that would be well within the scope of local contractors and the labor force, and it would provide that immediate employment. But there's no other place you could do that with that building other than where that building is now. But the long-term care facility can be relocated.
But where did you get those numbers from? You mentioned millions and the cost of where did those numbers come from?
42 years experience in the business.
Okay. I can understand how significant architecture, for example, along a main street or in a downtown is very enhancing. I can also understand that historic buildings homes can have a great impact and positive impact in residential areas. This is an industrial building and a commercial in building. Why in its location and this particular one, why is it significant and how does it enhance as compared to what the others do?
The property is zoned urban institutional. Mm-hmm. That zoning is an anomaly. It was built, that zoning was created to accommodate the structure that was there. Mm-hmm. The neighborhood in which the property is located is a very interesting mixed residential. When I say mixed, newer and older buildings, and indeed another significant institutional building from the same time period. Mm-hmm. The Powers School that was converted to socially responsible housing is directly across the road. Mm-hmm. This is an important intersection. It's not an isolated part of the community. Mm-hmm. Trinity College up the road, downtown down the road, main access to the 401 down into the industrial area, four-way stop sign. It's always busy there. So its prominent location was one of the features that made it worth designation. And combined with the restored and reused Powers High School, an adapted and reused building directly across would really suit the neighborhood, suit the original plan for that neighborhood, and be a very strong positive catalyst for upgrades and further development in the neighborhood.
Well, one of the other candidates has suggested that if this isn't suitable for Southbridge, that the town maybe negotiate an arrangement with them where they provide them with another piece of land that would be suitable for their needs, and do a land swap, if you will. That way the town could keep this building designated. It would be then owned by the town, and the town would provide Southbridge with another piece of property. Is that something that you'd be willing to entertain?
I'd be willing to entertain almost any positive step that preserved the buildings, preserved the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and facilitated the long-term care facility construction. Mm-hmm. However, I don't expect Southbridge would agree to that. I think that Southbridge would prefer to, if, even if they did build another location, to keep that location. That's a very valuable location. Mm-hmm. And developed properly could fit in very nicely with their business and serve them, the community, and their residents and staff very well.
Well, you mentioned Dr. Power School, which is located in the same neighborhood across the road, essentially. Would it be your decision then, or your wish, to turn the property then from its current situation, spending just a few million dollars apparently, to turn it into affordable housing as well?
I could see that as a good alternative that would suit my aspirations for the neighborhood, but it's not my property. It's not my building.
No, I get that, but I'm just thinking, right now, you've got a thing that says here the building is neither abandoned nor derelict, but it is abandoned. Nobody's living in there now. What's it being used for presently?
It's unused, which is very much different from abandoned. Abandoned is the pejorative term that's, has the connotation
of
useless.
But it's empty. It's an empty shell of a building at this point.
Well, it was last used on April 11th of this year. It was used as storage by Southbridge.
Okay.
Lights came on and off every day, and, a senior employee told me that, yes, the building had been used for storage until after the unanimous vote to designate, and then an order came down from above, no more lights, no more going in that building. And then they put the fence around it and the signs and what have you. So, really, this is a gross exaggeration and mischaracterization to call this an abandoned, a derelict building that's really of no value or use. It has extremely high value, can be put to many good uses, some of them even, as I mentioned, very well suited to the Southbridge business plan of a continuum of care, as they called it.
Mm-hmm.
It could, I agree that to renovate the building to the standards required for a future long-term care facility could be difficult, could be done, but whether it's worth doing or not is a question. But certainly it could provide facilities at the other end of the spectrum, that is, apartments for seniors and other.
Is there an elevator in this building?
Oh, no, there wouldn't have been elevators in a building of that age, but elevators can be retrofitted. If you were to be, I mentioned a $3 to $5 million figure for renovation to.
Putting an elevator in would be almost $1 million, though.
No, that's what they say, but not at all. The
I'm living in a building right now that's having an elevator renovated, and it's costing well over $150,000 just to renovate an existing shaft.
Right.
So I'm wondering, if it's going to cost that much just to renovate an existing shaft, what's it going to cost to cut one into a building? I mean, that's essentially what would have to happen, right?
No, you wouldn't cut it into the building. You'd build the elevator shaft external to the existing footprint. And that way you're independent of that structure. You can build what you want with access at each floor. I've done this in high-end residential mm-hmm. installations as well as in commercial installations. And the type of elevator required mm-hmm. would be different for essentially a three-story building than it would be for a high-rise, and it would be different for a residential building than it would be for a long-term care facility.
So would you as a counselor then be willing to support any additional? Because, of course, the issue for Southbridge, of course, is cost.
Yeah, theirs is very much a money business.
Is the town willing to subsidize them for any overages? Would you be willing to vote for that if you were a counselor?
No, I don't think they should need to, and I don't think they should have to.
Okay.
Southbridge bought this fully aware that that building was there. And if Southbridge had done even the most preliminary, cursory review of mm-hmm. the possibilities, they would have realized that this building could be and would likely be designated if they made any kinds of overtures towards the demolition. The first time they mentioned demolition to the city was September the 28th, 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And it was within days of that that the move to designate was afoot. There was a pause put on that while there were negotiations between Southbridge and representatives of the town.
Mm-hmm.
And these went nowhere. Southbridge were absolutely fixed that the only thing they could do was to remove those buildings and develop as they develop everywhere.
Yeah, but even by their own admission, this space isn't large enough for what they want to do.
Exactly.
So, I mean, on one hand, they're saying, we're being forced to do this. The town is forcing us to make this decision. But by the same token, even their own analysis shows that it's not a significant enough footprint for them to do the work that they need to do in order to make it the facility they want to make it.
Well, as Keith McIntosh said at the council meeting on April the 4th of 2018, mm-hmm. Ideally we'd like 4 acres. We need 3. We think we can squeeze it into this site, which is less than 3. And as proof of that, they produced a very rudimentary, not to perfectly to scale, outline of a footprint of a building with no supporting documentation and no idea where it came from. It was inappropriate and inadequate, and they've used that ever since as proof that they could build what they want to build on that site. I would be skeptical that the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care would allow them to do what they intend to do.
I'm curious how you feel about, in the last week or two, there's been quite a number of advertisements, social media, initiated by Southbridge around this issue and advocating, obviously, for their cause. How have you responded? How would you respond to that advertising?
Well, I've tried to make a point of not responding directly to Southbridge, but I characterize that type of advertising as motivated by desperation.
Is it impacting your campaign? Have you found that when you've been out talking to people? Has it had any impact?
It has a considerable impact. If you look at today's Facebook page for Port Hope Politics, you'll see outrage expressed almost universally at this clumsy, heavy-handed way that Southbridge have been conducting themselves.
Well, I think that's something that the current mayor and mayor candidate, Bob Sanderson, echoed on Wednesday when we spoke to him. I mean, his position has been pretty clear. They've been using this election as sort of an ability to get their agenda moved forward, if you will.
Yeah, and I think they're just desperate to move that agenda forward. If you read their website, you'll see things like as recently as 5 years ago, 4 years ago, they had only 9 facilities in all of Ontario. Mm-hmm. They purchased their 9th one in November of 2014. And now they claim to have, I think it's 37 facilities in 24 municipalities. And their model requires that they buy up these smaller facilities in small town Ontario and consolidate them in each center in which they're working. Mm-hmm. And they've got a 2025 deadline to do that for all of these facilities that they've bought recently. They're strapped for time, and I can imagine operating capital. Although, long-term care is a good business and it does attract investors. But that's also another problem. You've got to keep those investors happy to keep that cash coming, to keep the whole ball moving. Mm-hmm. And really, I think they see it as a great difficulty. And I'm reading between the lines here. They will correct me, I'm sure. For them to have to, at this stage of the game, buy another piece of property to facilitate what they intend to do. And really, what they intend to do really isn't good for anybody, especially the residents and staff. That site, 65 Ward, it will be a construction zone for 6 years. They've got a phased project in mind. It's going to take them a year to get their planning approved and implemented. Then they've got a demolition problem if they get their way, and then they've got a construction problem. Then they have to move the residents from the existing facility to the new one they've constructed, and constructing the new facility, even if it's just half of what they want to do, is a two and a half year project. And then they've got another 2.5 year project to replace or renovate the existing. So this is something that's going to go right to 2025, even if you fired the start gun today. And it's not going to be comfortable for anybody, and probably not even for Southbridge. They usually prefer a greenfield type of operation. Mm-hmm. There's frequent reference made to Owen Sound. We're one of their flagship progress projects is either in progress or complete. I'm not sure which. But what happened in Owen Sound is they were offered a central downtown location. They refused it because it contained the historic jail building, and they didn't want to deal with that either in work around it or work through it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And instead, they moved to a industrial area on the outlying edge of the town, tucked in tight to a Canadian Tire. But its big advantage to them was that it was a large piece that was vacant. They could move in mm-hmm. there and work efficiently.
Well, I wish we had more time, but we don't. We've run out of time. Obviously, for more information on this, the listeners can go to your website,
It'd be better if they went to porthopepolitics.ca and they can see a comprehensive gathering of all the information that I've put out and interviews and such.
All right. So Anthony is running for Ward 1 councillor in Port Hope. And if you like what you heard and you want to go online to find out more about Anthony, he's not a single issue candidate, just so you know. But this one in particular, he's passionate about. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for being here.